The Rebel Capitalist Show, episode 211.
Welcome to the podcast that helps you build wealth and thrive in a world of out-of-control central banks and big governments. This is the Rebel Capitalist Show.
All right, guys, it gives me a great deal of pleasure to welcome someone back to the Rebel Capitalist Show. He is my good buddy and real estate expert, Jason Hartman. Hartman, welcome back to the show, my
friend. Hey, George, it's always great to talk to you. And I hope people don't accuse me of being too bullish again.
That's fine. We all have our opinion. But what I want to talk about today, though, is kind of the other side of the balance sheet. And that's the debt, something I've been thinking through for, boy, probably the last 6 months. Is back in quote unquote normal times, right, when the market's rational, if you look at a balance sheet, the asset is the property,
right,
and the liability is the debt. But now I think it's almost switched, where the property is actually the liability because prices are very high. I know you think that they're going higher, but they're still pretty expensive, relatively speaking.
Right.
But the debt, if you get a fixed rate 30-year mortgage, is incredibly cheap. And I think people will increase their purchasing power more for the next 10, 20 years through owning the debt than they will by owning the property. And I know that's a concept that's really difficult for people to get their mind around. So what I did is I called you this morning. I said, hey, man, let's go through your concept of inflation-induced debt destruction, because you've got all these awesome charts, these slides that will really help people understand why, if they have a 3% mortgage, as an example, and inflation runs higher than 3%, at 5%, 10%, let's say we get the 1970s, that's a transfer of wealth from the lender to the borrower. So that's why Jason's here, and he's going to help us understand that completely.
Yeah, George, you're absolutely right. And, you know, kudos to you for recognizing this so long ago. Very few people really recognize this concept that I call inflation-induced debt destruction. I actually trademarked that phrase years ago. And it's true, because most people don't see this hidden wealth creator. And it would apply to a lot of other assets besides real estate or besides income property, if those other assets had the same characteristics that income property does. But sadly, they don't. Income property is in a class by itself, because it's multidimensional, it's unique in a lot of ways. And that's why it's the most historically proven wealth creator in the world, in my opinion. And
just use it for the people who are kind of more macro guys and gals. That having a 30-year fixed rate mortgage right now is a way to short the dollar.
Right. Absolutely.
In simple terms, you're shorting the dollar. So right. I know a lot of people, and I just spoke to a few of the members of my Rebel Capitalist Pro program last night, and they're talking about being very, very worried because they've got $200,000 and sometimes more in cash. Mm-hmm. And like, man, I really am worried because I'm losing purchasing power due to inflation. And so what do I do? And then they went on to say that they actually own a lot of real estate. They're real estate investors, and they've got quite a few properties that they own with a 30-year fixed rate mortgage. And I said, guys, let's think about this. I'm not saying don't be worried about your cash position,
right?
But I'm saying you should be a little less worried, because you've got these properties that where you're shorting the dollar through those 30-year fixed rate mortgages that give you kind of a counterbalance.
Right.
I never even thought of it that way. Mm-hmm. And I think that's another reason why understanding this is so important.
Yeah, it is. And you know, if they have a lot of equity in those properties, that's pretty much like having cash in the bank. That will lose purchasing power with inflation, but the debt will gain purchasing power vis-a-vis inflation. So as I've always said, another technique that I've shared with your viewers on your show over about a year ago was my refi till you die strategy.
Yeah,
and right. you want to keep these properties appropriately levered up, use an appropriate amount of leverage always, and, you know, through time, refinance them so that you get more inflation-induced debt destruction, as long as interest rates are low, and they are artificially very low, and as long as you can maintain a neutral or positive cash flow position. In fact, I would even argue that there's a strategy I used to talk about years and years ago, but it's not really applicable anymore because the lenders won't let you do it. But I call it the deferred down payment strategy, so we won't go into that. But I just like leverage. I jokingly, kind of snarkily say debt is my favorite four-letter word. And, you know, as long as it's good debt, you know, good mortgage debt. I mean, I don't have any other debt except mortgage debt. Consumer debt is obviously terrible. It's too expensive. Student loan debt is a ripoff. But mortgage debt at incredibly cheap rates is actually quite a bargain, and people should take advantage of that. Yeah.
So let's go through the numbers so people can really get their head around what we're talking about, and they can see. I do a lot of podcasts as well, and they say, George, just let's keep it super simple. What's two or three things that the average Joe or Jane can do? And I always say, you know, have a little gold and silver, might want to buy some Bitcoin or something like that as a speculation. But if you've got a house, regardless of whether it's a rental property or not, just make sure you got a 30-year fixed rate mortgage. It's the easiest thing people can do to take advantage of consumer price inflation if you're someone that believes that's what we're going to have over the next 10, 20 years.
Well, I think we're already having a significant amount of it. I mean, especially, you know, with the Cervasa sickness the past year, a whole bunch of prices have gone up of just tons of things. But we don't even need to get into that. But, you know, one of the things that I think it's hard for people to grapple with, and you mentioned this off air, is this idea of a wealth transfer. And, you know, you can benefit from a wealth transfer even if you don't get a check for it, okay? People have to understand that wealth is constantly being moved around and transferred from one group to another, one person to another, one entity to another. And in this case, with inflation-induced debt destruction, mortgages or wealth is being transferred from the lender to the borrower.
Right,
but
right.
The borrower doesn't really notice it most of the time until much later. They don't even understand why they got wealthy. And let me give you the example of my mother, okay, before we get into the numbers here. Because in 1976, she purchased her first home, okay? And she used to say that she never thought she could make that mortgage payment. It was so expensive. It was in Los Angeles where I grew up. And, you know, it's an expensive home now. And I guess maybe relatively it was expensive then at $62,500. Okay. In West Los Angeles, if you can believe that. Not a great area of West LA, but still West LA, you know, zip code. And, you know, her mortgage payment back then was $416 per month.
Okay.
And she used to tell me about how that payment felt, okay, over the years. The payment didn't change. And so even 5 years later by 1981 and 10 years later by 1986, you know, she was still writing a check for the same amount, $416 a month, but it felt much cheaper over time.
And let me chime in there. And the reason it did is because her income was going up with the rate of inflation, or maybe a little bit higher, but most people's income will go up with, sometimes it lags, I totally get that. But if it's going up, or your rents are going up with the rate of inflation, then that mortgage payment stays the same. And that's the delta that you're talking about.
Absolutely. Now, I don't know about her income per se, but statistically at least, and of course you know this all too well, from 1977 until about 2016, in real dollar terms, the typical American worker did not have a raise.
Correct.
They actually their pay actually went down.
But it's still going up considerably in nominal terms.
In nominal terms, yeah. So that's interesting. But understand that wealth transfer can be happening without you even noticing, And I just say one more thing because you mentioned balance sheets, and then we'll dive into these numbers, okay?
Okay.
So most people, they look at a balance sheet of anything, right? Say you have a business or a personal balance sheet and you want to figure out your net worth, right? You add up all your assets are in one column, and on the other side are all your liabilities. So assets might be a real estate you own. It might be stocks that you own. It might be cryptocurrencies. It might be a business, your furniture, artwork, gold, silver, whatever you own, right? And then all your debts go on the other side, all your liabilities, that's what you owe. And obviously, I mean, this is not exactly sophisticated yet, but I'm just going to tell you a little tweak for it. You subtract the liabilities from the assets, and hopefully that number is a positive number, right? And that's your net worth. But one asset that people have that's maybe kind of intangible feeling is their credit score or their ability to borrow money. And borrowing, when it's the right kind of borrowing, really is a huge asset. Mm-hmm. And so if you don't use your ability to borrow, you have an unused asset. It would be like, you know, being a great artist or a great musician or a star athlete or a great businessman and not using your talents, right? So this is an asset you have. You should use your ability to borrow because of what we're talking about, inflation-induced debt destruction.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So let's go over the numbers so people can really see what we're referring to.
So let's go back to 1 year after we went off the gold standard. Okay, now this this year is the 50-year anniversary of Nixon's infamous speech where he closed the gold window, right? Right. And he said he was going to suspend temporarily, and I quote, the convertibility of the dollar to gold. And
it's still temporarily suspended.
Half a century later. Yeah.
They've never officially just severed ties. It's still supposed to be temporary.
Right. Yeah. It's you can't make this stuff up. You know, Milton Friedman, one of my favorites, and probably yours too. He said, there's nothing so permanent as a temporary government program.
That's right. Yeah. So true, isn't it?
So let's go back to 1972. Okay. And the interest rate on a 30-year mortgage right in the middle of 1972 was 7.37%. And the median house price was $18,267, okay? And if you got an 80% loan and put 20% down on that house, you would have borrowed $14,000 and change. I'll just round off for speed, okay? So that's the deal, right? You bought this house, 1972, you got a mortgage for a little over $14,000. You paid 7.37% interest for three decades, fixed rate, okay? And when you started back in 1972, a dollar was worth a dollar because we didn't have any inflation, you know, yet to report, okay? So as you go through time, though, that dollar declines in value because of inflation.
And rents and incomes are going up with inflation, or even slightly less, but they're still going up as a result, right?
Right. They are indexed to some degree or another to inflation. It might be a little lower, a little higher, but it's right around there. Now, the example we're talking about today, George, is a home that someone lived in. It's not a rental property. And we're taking this completely out of the idea of the, you know, ivory tower. This is not a theory. It's not some esoteric exercise. It's, you know, it happened to millions of people. This is not a theory. It really happened. Okay. So every year, these people would pay $1,211 in 12 mortgage payments of $101 per month.
Right.
Okay. That's, you know, if you borrow 80% at 7.37%, you know, you'd pay $101 a month. That's the mortgage payment. Okay. Now let's fast forward to a year that the famous book George Orwell wrote back in 1948. The book was called 1984. Okay. Yeah, yeah. And so if we go to 1984, that same 1972 dollar is now only worth 40 cents.
Right.
But that homeowner is still writing checks every month for $101 for their mortgage payment. Mm-hmm. So the nominal amount of the check, that what it says on the check, is still $101, but the value of that $101 has declined to only $41. Mm-hmm. So like my mom's example, that payment felt a lot lower. It felt much more affordable 12 years later.
Okay? Yeah. So let me say this another way, Jason, just hopefully so people are following along here. If let's just say that at the beginning, going back to 1972, your annual payments, mortgage payments were $1,200. Let's say that you were making $1,200 back then. And so every single penny you were making was going to your mortgage payment. Obviously, you'd be stretched very thin. That would not be comfortable. But what Jason's saying here and what he's illustrating is in 1984, if your monthly inflation adjusted payment went from $100 basically down to $40, you would be over doubling your income. So your income now, let's say, would be $2,500. But your annual payment would still be $1,200. So see, now you've got a difference of, let's say, $1,300, where before you were making the exact same amount as you were spending on the mortgage.
Right.
So there was nothing left over at the end of the day, where now you've got $1,300. Yes, that $1,300 has a lot less purchasing power than it did, but it's a lot more than zero.
Right.
And that's why this works so well. Am I making sense there? Can you?
You're absolutely making sense. And since it's a monthly payment and the way lenders figure stuff is on monthly, let's go with a monthly example too.
Oh, I should have done that. That's better. Yeah. So if you start with $100, let's say you're making $100 a month, but then by 1984, let's say you're making, $220.
Let's actually make it even more like realistic how it would have been underwritten, right? So say, for example, your debt to income ratio could have been 33% back then. You're making $300 a month and they'll let you have a mortgage payment of $100 a month. But by 1984, you're now making $700 a month and you're still paying the same mortgage payment of only $100 or $101 to be exact, right?
Right. So there you go.
Now you got $600 left over instead of $200 left over, and the payment feels like $41. Super glad you mentioned that. That's great. And the same might be happening with the rent. Okay.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And so, you know, another interesting point that I've talked about a lot on my podcast is this. What other asset other than rental property or income property can you be put in the beautiful position? You know, George, slavery thankfully is illegal. Okay. So
I'm glad you clarified that for us. You're gonna learn a lot today on the Rebel Capitalist with Jason Hartman.
Yeah. I'm probably going to get some wacko hate mail for that one. I said, thankfully, it's illegal, right? And so is indentured servitude, okay? So even that, you can't do that either. But what's interesting about this is your tenants in your rental properties, if they're paying, just say, for example, 33% to 40% of their income in their rent payment, they're essentially, for the first 12 to 14 days of every month, they're working for you.
Yeah, right.
Okay. I mean, what other, you look at one of the biggest companies on the planet, most successful companies, Apple Computer. I mean, I don't give 33 to 40% of my income to Apple Computer. Okay. You know, but with rental property, that's exactly what tenants do. They give that money to you every month. Right. Yeah. You know, 33 to 40% of their income goes to you every year when it comes tax time rolls around. You always hear these people talking about how, we had to work until, May to pay our taxes this year. And now taxes are going up and we're going to have to work till June just to pay our taxes. Right. We don't get to live until the taxes are paid. Same is true with a rental property, but it benefits you.
Yeah. So let's, and then also too, I mean, your renters are building equity for you. They're making this payment. They're paying your interest. They're doing all these things, but you've got a lot of these spreadsheets on your website. So I want to focus on the inflation, and how that is that transfer of wealth we were talking about. So
let's go to the second page. But before we do, let me just point out a couple things here. In one of the columns on the screen, we've got the annual inflation rate, the official rate every year, right? Yep. And you know, that you see back in 1972, it starts out at only 3.2%, and it gets really bad in there with the Jimmy Carter era before Paul Volcker broke the back of inflation, where I think you got as high as like 13% annually, right?
13.5 in 80.
Yeah. And that's the official number. Remember, we all know these numbers are manipulated lower and they're in real life higher. And that means the inflation-induced debt destruction is even better in real terms than what the government tells us.
Well, Jason, let's use a real life example, because mm-hmm. you own several rental properties, and you're actually very hands-on with the management. So how much are you increasing rents, or with your customers, you know, with your investors?
Yeah.
How much have you seen annual rents go up over the last, let's say, 5 years?
Well, I don't have an actual stat handy for you because it's fragmented. You know, one property will do this, the other will do that. And, you know, you might have a tenant you really like and want to keep. And so you won't be as aggressive on rent increases. But what I will tell you is, in an era where rates are very low, it is harder to raise rents a lot because the tenants have the option that housing's more affordable, right? And they can buy. When rates are high, typically landlords can raise rents more aggressively because tenants don't have the opportunity to move as easily. So there's more demand for rental housing. But I would target, you know, ideally you'd get 4% annually as a rent increase, but mostly, you know, the past decade or so, nobody's been able to pull that off very well. So, you know, 3% annually is a good number. So, you know, think about it. If you have a rental that's $1,000 a month, you raise the rent $30. No one's moving for $30 a month. Okay, it would cost more than that to just reconnect your utilities in a new house and pay the movers, right?
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business, to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris, Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for.
I think what people should do is take that $1,000 number and then, okay, so you, it's obvious what it is after a year, but then compound that at a 3% clip over, let's say, 5 years and 10 years, and then just remember that your mortgage is the same, and then look at the difference there. And then that's when you're going to start to again notice what we're talking about on this spreadsheet, where there's that transfer of wealth from the lender to the borrower. And the more extreme inflation gets, like if you're, let's just assume that you're able to raise rents as much as inflation went up in the 1970s. To just think about that for a second and how much that would increase your monthly positive cash flow coming to the bottom line when your mortgage payment is fixed.
Yeah, that would be phenomenal. So you get the benefit of the fixed rate mortgage where the tenant has a variable rate, right?
Yeah, right,
and you
right.
get to make the margin on between those two. So it's a great deal for you. Yeah.
Yeah. And the reason I'm doing this again, guys, I'm not here to just say, go out and buy a rental property right away. I'm just trying to get you to understand how owning a 30-year fixed rate mortgage is a benefit. It could be maybe even considered an asset and why it's kind of like shorting the dollar.
It is. It's George puts it so well. It is. You're shorting the dollar here, and it's a great way to short the dollar, because even if the dollar doesn't depreciate, okay, and you don't get a bunch of inflation-induced debt destruction, the likelihood is that the commodity value of these packaged commodities, and George, we did a video on that on your show a long time ago as well, when I talked about the Hartman risk evaluator, those commodities are going to go up in price, right? Yeah. All these ingredients of the house, the lumber, the copper wire, the steel, the glass, the petroleum products, the concrete that all builds the house, the energy cost, et cetera. So that's good. And this is, the reason this debt is good and other debt is bad is that this debt is self-liquidating debt. You don't pay the debt. You outsource the debt repayment obligation to somebody else called a tenant, okay? They pay the debt. Listen, if I'm going to take on a debt, I don't want to pay it back. I want someone else to pay it back for me, right? And that's essentially what we're doing here. So it's self-liquidating debt.
But let's just assume this is an owner-occupant.
Right.
And even if you don't have the renter paying your mortgage payment for you, this the same concept that we're going over with these numbers is still applicable.
It's still applicable. It's just dramatically better on a rental property.
Yeah, right.
And if it, one more thing, and we'll go to the second spreadsheet here, okay? You know, if you liken this to the corporate world and the Wall Street world, here's a good comparison, I think. You know, in the 80s, when all these corporate raiders became a big deal, and we all heard about many of them for the first time, you know, Carl Icahn, Ivan Boesky, you know, T. Boone Pickens, all the rest of them, right? You know, these are all big names. We had the movie Wall Street. One of the key things that they did that made them so successful is called the LBO, the leveraged buyout. And what a leveraged buyout is using, it is trying to buy the company for as little or nothing down if you can, but as little down as possible. And then using the company's cash flow to repay the cost of acquisition. That's what we do with properties. Automatically, that's the way the system works. We buy it with a nominal amount down, and then we use the cash flow from the asset to repay the acquisition costs, self-liquidating debt.
Right.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. Yeah.
All right. So should we go to this second part of the spreadsheet?
As people can see, inflation continues through the years. The official rate, on average, is only 5.1%. Okay. The real rate, as we all know and your listeners know, is much higher. But at the end of this 30-year mortgage, the dollar is now worth only 24 cents versus what it was worth three decades earlier. And so we've got a dollar that's only worth 24 cents. The last payment on that mortgage is the same amount the first payment was in nominal dollars. You're still writing the check for $101 per month,
right?
But the feel of that check, the real value of that check after inflation induced debt destruction, is only $24.
Right. Right.
This is beautiful. Okay. Only $24. And you know, so that's incredible. Now, if we total this up in sum, let's look at how this all worked out. Let's go back to the beginning and remember that we borrowed just a little over $14,000.
Mm-hmm.
And with the interest in nominal dollars, we repaid over $36,000.
At 7.3%, by the way.
Much higher rates than today. And this is why a lot of people get this faulty idea, this very wrong, bad idea, okay, that you want to pay off your mortgage early.
Right.
Right. Why would you ever pay off your mortgage early? Well, they look at the interest amount and they think, you know, they sit there when they're signing the loan docs and one spouse says to the other, honey, you know, we're going to repay $36,000 because it's on the disclosure, right? They see that in advance. The lender has to show it to you. And they think, you know, if we can just make one extra payment every year or pay a little extra every month, we'll pay this off in half the time. no, don't do that. It's a terrible idea.
So they're just thinking about it in today's dollars, assuming they're extrapolating that forward into the indefinite future.
Yeah, yeah, they don't understand the idea of inflation-induced debt destruction. And fortunately, everybody listening does understand that, and they will not do that. So in real dollars, after inflation took a bite out of the debt, okay, these millions of people, okay, only repaid $16,393 when they thought they repaid over $36,000, and they borrowed over $14,000. Okay, so in real dollars, they repaid just over $16,000, meaning their 7.37% mortgage, really the effective rate was only 1.06%. That's wonderful. But after tax benefits, because that mortgage interest is tax deductible, okay, now this could vary based on someone's tax bracket, obviously. So this is just an illustration. Understand that, you know, talk to your CPA for, you know, your personal situation. Okay, but they only repaid after inflation and tax benefits $12,655, okay, which means they got paid to borrow the money. They got a truly negative interest rate of 1.16%. They got paid to borrow the money. And that's only based on the official inflation numbers. And they lived in the house for free. They got a place to live. They didn't have to pay rent somewhere. Right, okay. Right. Now, if this were a rental property and you had the real inflation numbers in here, this example would be dramatically better. Not that it needs to be, because it's a darn incredible scenario already. Mm. But it would be much better if you weren't making your own mortgage payments.
Let me try to go through kind of a thought experiment, and I'm probably going to butcher this, so you can help me articulate it in a way that's far easier to understand, I'm sure. But I see prices right now coming down to the levels they were in 2012.
I watched your great video on that, by the way.
Yeah, and so the question is, are they going to come down in nominal terms or in real terms? Because they can appreciate in nominal terms and still come down if they're not going up at the same rate as inflation. So if I'm, and I'm not saying this is not a prediction, guys. I'm just saying if I'm a homeowner, and I'm trying to think through this as conservatively as I possibly can, and trying to take this concept of the debt being the asset and the property being the liability now. What I would do, because I see this, you've got this field of nominal appreciation and you've got this a real appreciation. I would try to calculate what I think the rate of inflation is going to be over the next, let's say 20 years, you know, annually. And then I would try to do a spreadsheet just like Jason has done right here with a 30-year fixed rate loan. And then I would ask myself, okay, how much purchasing power am I extracting from the bank in total? And let's just say your numbers are a 3% mortgage and a 10% rate of inflation. I know it's maybe high, but let's just assume that for the just making it easier. And so you calculate that 10% compounded over 10, 20 years. Okay, then how much purchasing power are you receiving as the borrower from the lender? And then I would juxtapose that to the maximum amount you could possibly lose on the property going down from where it is now to where it was in 2012, because that's our historic trend line, okay? And you can play around with the numbers. Let's say it just goes down in nominal terms all the way down, or let's say it goes down in real terms. You know, you can play around with the math based on what you think the probabilities are for the housing market in the future. But I think when you do that, you'll see that the what you'll make, what the high probability of what you'll make on the debt will exceed the value or the most conservative estimate of the nominal value of the price of the property actually going down. Am I making sense there?
Yes. And
it's almost like, you know, back in, let's say, normal times, the property or the asset, you assumed that would appreciate in value. And that's where, in real terms, and that's where you'd make money. But you always assumed that you had interest to pay on the debt, and therefore that's where you would be losing purchasing power. You see, but on net balance, you would assume that you would make more on the property than you would lose on the debt. What I'm saying, or trying to say, is that now I think it's the opposite. I think that even if you believe you're going to lose money on the property, which you might, if you actually do the math with this spreadsheet, I think you'll find that you'll most likely make more money or increase your purchasing power more with the debt. Did I make that clear?
Yes, you did. It seems though that to have the property go up in value, nominal or real dollars, we don't need to split hairs on that one. You have to have inflation, right?
Yeah.
And to have the inflation-induced debt destruction example, you also have to have inflation, right?
Yes. So, well, yeah. Although
you there's like a decoupling argument.
Yeah. That's why I say people have to think through this on their own. Mm-hmm. Because if we go back to the 1970s as an example, you know, just going back to your spreadsheet, we saw that inflation, like 1972, let me go back to that, Jason. So in 72, inflation was at 3.2%. 73, inflation 6.2%. 74, inflation at 11%. And that, again, to your point, that's the government statistics. But I'd like to point out that the stock market from 1972 to 1974 went down in nominal terms, mm-hmm, by over 50%.
Wow.
So my point is that it, although it might not be likely, it is possible for asset prices to go down in nominal terms while we're experiencing relatively high rates of consumer price inflation.
Yep, that is true. I agree. And that's because there was an asset bubble that preceded inflation, right? They get out of sync. You know, if you look at housing prices and you look at the median house price over, you know, four decades, you'll see times when the house price has far exceeded the inflation rate. Now, again, that's not the real inflation rate because it's never on those charts, but, you know, just go with it, right?
Or look at price to income ratios too.
Yeah, they definitely get out of sync. There's no question about it. But the problem is you got to segment the housing market into linear, cyclical, and hybrid markets, at least, if not further than that.
Let's save that for another conversation, because I think we've hopefully illustrated the point, and I think people by listening to this will have a better understanding on why there's that transfer of wealth. So I don't want to go down too many different paths to because I'm confusing myself. I don't
want to confuse them. Hey, if the host gets confused, we're in trouble.
All right, man. I don't know how long we've been talking.
George, I do have one more thing though I want to share.
Yeah.
So, you know, there is a lot of talk, as there always is, of, you know, will prices continue to go up? Housing prices. Are we in a bubble? The prices are high, blah, blah, blah. We talked on a prior episode about the mortgage payment versus the house price and me saying the mortgage payment is more important. But here's I want to make this prediction, memorialize it. You know, if I'm wrong in 5 years, tell me I was an idiot, but I think I'm going to be right and I want to get credit, okay?
Because
I think I'm going to be right about this, cool. Okay? And here's the prediction, okay? And yeah, I saw your video that you did, an excellent video about how, you know, what if mortgage payments go up to 8%, you know, like a more realistic mortgage rate, you know, that would cost, make housing cost a lot more every month. And you're definitely all right about that. But here's the thing that really nobody's talking about except me. It's the supply side of the equation. And I think the millions of people that have refinanced their homes or purchased new homes with these artificially cheap mortgages are going to hold them like, you know, like it's a life raft. They're not going to let them go because the mortgage can't be transferred to a new property. And so that is going to constrain supply dramatically. If rates go up, these mortgages that are out there at 2.75% or whatever this insanely low rate is, are going to become so valuable that nobody's going to want to let them go. So there, you know, maybe there's a stock tip in here. So Home Depot stock and Lowe's stock and contractors that do additions onto homes and landscaping companies, they're all going to be booming business because people are going to stay in place. Okay. They're going to be incentivized to stay in place and improve their house, or they're not going to let their house go and they're going to turn it into a rental property. Okay. So supply, there is already a structural, you know, I'll use it like everybody talks about systemic racism, right? I'm going to call it systemic shortage in housing. Okay. We have a systemic housing shortage, and this housing shortage will be exacerbated by all of these owners that have these artificially cheap mortgages that are not going to sell their properties. And that's going to make the shortage even worse because they're not going to relinquish the properties. Even as people are aging in place, technology is allowing people to age in place. They don't have to go into a nursing home and sell their house. Okay. You know, they, if they have an Apple Watch, they can be monitored by their relatives, their healthcare providers, you know, all this kind of technology that just keeps getting better and better. So there's going to be a lot of people that just don't put their houses on the market. That's my prediction. And I think that's going to cause upward pressure on prices and upward pressure on rents in the future.
Yeah. My only prediction is that housing prices will come down to their historic trend line, but I don't know if they'll come down just in nominal terms or in real terms. I don't know. So what we're saying there, guys, is if you're thinking that through, we could both be right. Jason could be right in the sense that housing prices go up, and I could be right in the sense that housing prices come back down to their historic trend line adjusted for inflation.
Right.
And I think that's a good lesson in addition to what we just talked about with the inflation-induced debt destruction.
Yeah. Good stuff. Good stuff.
All right, buddy. For my viewers and listeners who want to find out more about what you do, tell them about the pod. Tell them about your 45 podcasts and counting and your website.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've been podcasting for like, I don't know, 16 years now or something. So I've got like 6,000 podcast episodes out there for you. So, you know, if I didn't say anything that intrigued you today, there's more. So the Creating Wealth
is the Creating Wealth Show. And that's one of the first podcasts I started listening to when I got into real estate back in 2012.
Yeah. Yeah. So the Creating Wealth Show is my main show. And George, I appreciate you listening way back in 2012. And then I am on YouTube. I'm not as big as George by a long shot, but I got a burgeoning YouTube audience. So you can find me there. And then my website is jasonhartman.com.
All right, buddy. Thanks for your time. Okay. Can't wait to do it again, man.
Hey, thank you, George. Happy investing to you and all of your viewers and listeners.
Thank you for listening to the Rebel Capitalist Show. For more content like this, check out the Rebel Capitalist blog at georgegammon.com or go to the George Gammon YouTube channel.